Pit Guys.
This week's episode is brought to you by Colorado Land Tire and Service. Another week and another episode.
We're here. We're here in your garage.
We are still alive.
Yep.
And we are still podcasting. We might have fooled a few of you because we haven't been posting up episodes as frequently as we should
have.
Well,
and we missed a podcast because we were guests on another podcast.
Yeah, we are like living the podcast dream.
Yeah.
Y'all need to go check out. Oh man, did I just say y'all?
What is wrong wow. with you? You freaking idiot.
Oh, jeez. You all need to go look at Torque King 4x4's podcast. We were on a couple weeks ago. We had some awesome conversations about UTVs and Roxers. And
Mahindra Roxers.
Yep. And just in general, we got to learn a lot about Torque King and what those guys do.
And if you guys aren't familiar, Torque King is a huge resource for those of you who wheel old, or even not wheel, but just build old American iron. You know, when you're looking at getting obscure seal parts for Ram Chargers and Broncos and, you know, like 60s, 70s, 80s, stuff like that, we're talking like weird seals and things.
They said they do a lot of plow truck parts too.
Yeah, but that you think about what a plow truck is and like, in here in Grand County, Colorado, the majority of our plow rigs are all like 70s and 80s Blazers.
Yep.
So a lot of that stuff you can't get off the shelf at your local CarQuest. But these Torque King guys, they got it, man. Huge resource to have in your back pocket.
They're based out of Montana. Super cool dudes.
Yep. They're regular guys just like us.
Except they got a big ass shop full of parts, man. You were drooling when we were looking at their shop.
Yeah. So anyway, check that episode out. That's where we were. We were talking with them. Go check them out for sure.
The other excuse we have is that we've just been crazy busy.
Oh yes.
We've wrapped up a couple of cool projects.
Yeah. So you know, some of you have been following along. We had that kind of the barn find cleanup, where we found that Camaro and a few other treasures. We finally dropped the last building to the ground. Definitely go to my YouTube channel, Doing Stuff with Hopper, and watch my latest video, because you get to see Zach disobey a direct order, and the demolition sequence goes terribly wrong, because Zach did not follow my instructions. He realized it, we reset, and it was glorious.
It was, to date, my favorite episode of Doing Stuff with Hopper on YouTube.
It was pretty fun.
Even my coworker Logan watched it last night and was like, that was pretty awesome.
Sweet.
It was just good quality editing.
Great music. Getting better with the old Final Cut Pro, and I finally graduated from my GoPros. I still use GoPros, but I got a Nikon Z30, or as if our friends in the north call it, a Z30. So a fancy camera. Definitely trying to get a little better with my editing. So we did that. And those of you who don't live in the Rockies or somewhere that gets huge snowfalls, you might not realize, but this shoulder season, like, you get stuck in like, hey, fall's nice, this is awesome when you get a fall. But then you get that first snowfall and you're like, crap. There's 9,000 things we have to do before everything's buried and we've lost everything. Like, I got this little scrap pile of metal. I got to squirrel it away to where I can find it, because you get too much snow and it's gone. You find it with the snowblower. That first snowblow run of the year, you just got a pocket full of shear pins because you hit so much stuff.
And we are there. We're supposed to get 12 inches of snow tonight. Ski resort has opened up here in Winter Park.
It's been cold. It was 1 below the other morning.
Yep. 1 below as in -1, not 1 below like as in 31.
Who the heck needed that explanation?
Well, some people. Anyway, it's cold. It's winter here. We're, like I said, we wrapped up a couple big projects. We got a little bit of maintenance to do here and there. We have been crazy busy.
I sold my Subaru.
Yes, that was a great deal.
I'm about to sell my FSJ. Babe the Blue Ox is going to be up for sale. I'm going to get rid of that. We're going to have a Camaro and a Willys wagon, Willys CJ3B for sale. we're just moving and shaking, man.
I do love that this summer was like the summer of like group projects.
Yeah.
We did pretty well. We had to work a lot, but it was fun. It was social work.
Yep.
You know, and it put a little bit of money in our pockets. It's paying for our vacation that we're going on in a couple of weeks. Pretty excited about vacation. The Bachmans and the Beckers and the Sawatskis.
We are going on vacation.
No kids.
No kids. And get this. Are you guys all sitting down? Sit down for this.
Once in a lifetime opportunity here.
We are going on a cruise.
Yes.
I have never seen the ocean, let alone been on the cruise. I have flown commercially on a jet airliner twice in my life. This will be time three. It's going to freaking blow my mind.
You will be putting boots on foreign soil.
I've never been out of the country. I paid for the unlimited drinks package on the cruise ship. I don't plan on being sober the whole trip.
And you bought a new swimsuit.
I bought a swimsuit. I bought
flip-flops.
This has been an expensive trip because not only have I been spending money on a trip, but I have no lifestyle accessories. I don't have like a real swimsuit. I don't have sandals. So I bought flip-flops. Like I bought Hawaiian shirts. I got this stuff. We've spent so much money on stuff for vacation because guess what? The Beckers don't vacation. And by, I mean, I go to races and that's like it.
Well, that's the thing, man. Everybody thinks, I was just having this conversation the other day. Everybody thinks we go to these races, right? We go 6-7 races a year. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, you're always traveling and going on these trips and having so much fun.
Which is true.
It's true. They are fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun because we work and we do what we're passionate about.
They are a lot of work. Races are a lot of work.
But the prep that goes into those trips and the clean packing and the cleaning and the work while we're there, we love all that. We are not complaining. But this is going to be like an actual vacation with naps.
Like, literally, I can be drunk the whole day and not give a rip. Because guess what? I don't have to, like, do anything.
Let's be honest. We could probably be like that at half of the Ultra 4 races we get to.
Well,
but we don't.
I'm kind of worthless.
We're working when we're there.
When I get a little start indulging in the old be joyful, Grampy's cough medicine, I started slowing down.
I just can't wait, man, to see you on a boat.
You can wake up. I've heard tell you wake up at 2 a.m. and you can walk in and get a hamburger or a cheeseburger.
I've done it, man. And we're going to do it. We have to pick a night where we go to the old O'Sheehan's and get some hot wings at 3 in the morning.
And so I got a room, got a stateroom, they call them. It's got a balcony, so I can, like, stand on the balcony and I can take a leak into the ocean.
Well, you actually can't do that, but
what?
You'll figure that out.
Why the heck did I pay for a balcony room?
I just got this strange feeling that you might be that guy that falls off the cruise ship.
I probably will be, and it will be glorious.
We'll never, you'll just float
the
away.
The Somali Coast Guard will come pick me up. Do you suppose they get, here's, if there's anything that we, there's two things I want to do on this trip. There's two things and two things only that I care to do.
They're the most impossible things to, like, figure out, too.
One, I want to go to the bridge. Is it the con? The bridge? I don't know what they call it on a cruise ship. And I want to walk up to the captain, and I want to record myself saying, look at me. I am the captain. I am the captain now. I want to do that. And the second thing I want to do, I don't know where we're going or how it's going to work, but I want to find a freaking 12-year-old boy with a monkey on a string. And I want to, like, pet that monkey.
I am trying to make this dream happen for you, but when you try to Google 12-year-old boy with monkey on a string, some real weird shit comes up, man. It's I'm having a hard time.
Well, I can only imagine.
Finding this.
I can only imagine. I haven't Googled that yet, but I'll wait till I get home.
I have been told about a monkey, like, eco tour.
I don't want to do that, though.
But I was also told that the monkeys are assholes, and they, like, will rob you and spit on you and, like, slap you in the face.
Well, when you put it that way, this sounds intriguing.
I'm not into
it,
but hey.
I've never been in a fight with a monkey, but there's a first time for everything.
It's also, gonna be incredible.
Also, I'm just super. If you guys know anything about me, I go all the time. Like, I've always got something happening.
Or six. Yeah.
It gets exhausting. It's going to be really cool to be able to just, like, sit there and do absolutely nothing. Not a tostada. Like, just nothing. I'm really looking forward to that.
It's pretty relaxing, man. Pretty relaxing. It's going to be a good time. It's a good group. It's going to be a lot of fun. You guys will definitely have to tune in to the podcast in a few weeks and the YouTube
check
videos.
Out the YouTube footage. There could be some not appropriate for YouTube footage, but you can check out my link tree on my Instagram and go find that special footage elsewhere. Wink, wink, hint, hint.
This trip might be the birth of your OnlyFans.
You're not supposed to just say that. I did the whole wink, wink, hint, hint thing so people could go find it. But now you just put it out there. Yeah. So now all of our parents who are listening are going to be ashamed children.
They don't know what OnlyFans is. And they're not going to be ashamed if you've got one.
Wow, you just keep digging that hole deeper, Zach. Just keep going, buddy.
It is going to be incredible, though. We have a great guest tonight. We got Mick Henson on tonight. A
freaking rock star.
4,600 legend.
So if
I didn't realize he had only been racing for a couple years.
You wouldn't know it because of how hard he goes.
Yeah.
That guy's like, dude, when it comes to Ultra 4, like, I love sitting at a big obstacle and watching the 4,400 cars duke it out. Like, there's just something about 1,800 horsepower. And, oh, man, those cars are cool. But, you know, in my opinion, for what it's worth, the true heroes of Ultra 4, the real rock stars, it's the 4,600 guys and gals. You guys are out there. It's grassroots as it gets, man. Like, the 4,600, I never thought I wanted to race. Now I think I want to race. If I had to pick, I was like, oh, I'll do 4,800 because you can do this. Or I'll do, like, different classes I was thinking about. And at the end of the day, I'm like, who's the cool dudes? Who's the cool cats of Ultra 4? And it's the 4,600 guys. So super pumped to be talking to a 4,600 dude. And Mick, on top of it, is he's just a cool guy. He's a hard driver.
Super on a budget, grassroots.
Yep.
What we're all about at Ultra 4, I think, you know.
Yeah. So, and he's a Toyota guy. Those Toyota guys, they're a special breed, man. They are. They're passionate. They love their rigs.
Before we get on here, you mentioned you might have the racing bug. And we'll talk about this with Mick a little bit. But I did get you to sit in a race car last week.
A class 11, yes.
It was beautiful.
You know,
You were in the driver's seat. I was in the passenger seat. It was like angels were singing above us.
Yes.
It was really just Tom Prendergast and Seth and
hovering
and Joe just,
Gatlin.
Yeah. Just encouraging bad ideas. But, man, it felt so good to be in that class 11,
The
man.
Only problem is there's no four-wheel drive. It ain't got the rocks in it.
Dude, think about the air we could get.
Think about the freaking spines we can break.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, let's get going here.
Yep, stay tuned. We're going to give a little shout-out here, and then we're going to call up our buddy Mick. And we're going to get some insider info on what it takes to be a 4,600 rock star.
Do it.
I want to take a minute to give a huge shout out to our newest sponsor, the Colorado Land, Kansas Land, and Nebraska Land Tire and Service Group. These guys have not only helped me out when it comes to getting new wheels and tires, but they are also huge fans of racing. NASCAR, local dirt track racing, or off-road racing, these folks go above and beyond to support racers at all levels. Whether it's on your race car or your truck and trailer, these guys care. Find the nearest location by going to www.thetirestore.com. All right.
Here we are.
We are here. Here we are. Yeah.
In your garage. Again.
In my garage. Tonight, we got another... top tier Ultra 4 racer. I don't know why these guys keep answering our messages, man.
Because they're cool and they want to talk to us, which makes us cool by default, maybe. I don't know.
Makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
Well, who we got tonight?
Well, tonight we got we dialed up Mick Hansen.
Oh, heck yeah.
The man, a little bit of a legend in the 4600 class.
Yep.
And yeah, maybe he's got some other guys hanging out with him too. We'll find out.
Yeah. Well, hey, you with us, Mick?
I'm here.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We were talking about who we should get on the show this week, and you know, if you listen to the show, you know I'm a little bit of a UTV guy, mm-hmm. and so I kind of had a list of some UTV guys, and Hopper was kind of like, "Eh, well, yeah, okay," and I said, "Hey, let's call up Mick Hansen. Let's get a 4600 guy on the show. It's been a little bit," and man, you hit me right back, and I'm pumped to talk some 4600 racing tonight.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Mick, why don't you tell us a little bit about it yourself?
So my name's Mick Hansen. I'm 31 years old. I'm from Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Beautiful.
Which is basically, so y'all will understand, it's an hour from Jay and about an hour and 10 from Disney. I've been racing with Ultra 4 for probably going on 2 years, 2.5 years now. My first race was at a nationals race in Davis, I guess three nationals ago. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Tahlequah, Oklahoma, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Tahlequah, Oklahoma, like kind of where the book The Red Fern Grows was based? Hopper's looking at me like I've never read a book in my life.
So y'all are gonna love me about this. So yes, that is exactly where the Red Fern Grows comes from. And this is even crazier. You know the remake of the Red Fern Grows movie? It was filmed at the house I live in now. There's this old ratted out barn behind my house, and they filmed for like 3 weeks there, but there's like a 30-second clip in the movie, which is, it's super cool, but yeah.
Wow. That is cool. I was confused. The reason why I was giving Zach this look of consternation when he brought that up is because I was thinking Old Yeller is not from there. That's Texas, Birdsong Creek, but okay. Oh, now I'm tracking. We got where the Red Fern Grows, totally different.
Yeah, I have family in Western Oklahoma, but I went to school in Northwest Arkansas, so like I was cut through there. Kind of familiar with Tahlequah a little bit.
That's cool.
Don't tell too many people this, but that part of Oklahoma is actually kind of pretty.
it's pretty nice.
And I also don't even know, like, I mean, it's probably been 35 years since I've read Where the Red Fern Grows, but Tahlequah always makes me think of that. So anyway, huge side tangent right off the bat.
Okay. Yep. So you're from Tahlequah. Is that where you were from originally, or did you move around somewhere else, or?
No, I've basically lived there my entire life. When I was super young, like before school, we lived in Tulsa for a little bit, but no, I basically was born and raised in Tahlequah my entire life. I've lived within the same square 4 miles my entire life. Well,
that's kind of cool.
I lived in Alabama for 11 months, and I worked with Jake Berkey at Busted Knuckle for 11 months. But other than that, I've always lived in Oklahoma.
So you really, when you say that MAO and Disney is like your home track, like you're not kidding.
No, I've been, MAO is like newer to me. You know, I haven't been going out there but for a couple of years. But Disney, I've been going there for like 12, 13 years or something like that. You know, like back before razors were a thing is when I used to go, and it was just straight home built junky rock crawlers, you know.
Yeah, I miss those days. I miss them. They're gone.
Those are hoppers.
They are. They're definitely gone, especially at Disney around big meat run time. Like it's a swarm of razors, but I haven't missed a year in, 12 years or whatever. I've went every year for forever.
Well, we definitely want to circle back around to this because we want to pick your brain on the race at Disney. We haven't really had an actual podcast since we got back from Disney. So we do want to circle back to that and talk to you, especially since you're like the local guy there. But tell us kind of how you got your start, man. What got you into off-road? What got you into wheeling?
So when I was turning 16, I guess, it was time to pick out my first vehicle. And I didn't want a car because I've always kind of lived out in the country, but I didn't want some big, like gas guzzling truck. So I like settled in the middle for a little import truck. And, basically I just kind of seen them around a little bit and I wanted a Toyota truck, that's what I wanted. And my budget was super tight. And I ended up finding an 88 pickup for $1,500. So that's basically where it started. And it's just been a snowball effect ever since then.
Hmm. I'm assuming you started as a rec wheeler, as many of us did. Like racing probably wasn't your initial ambition.
No. Even my little tan truck, it was supposed to be a rec wheeler just to get me by for a little bit, and it snowballed into a race truck.
Well, we are all too familiar with this.
Yeah. So. You started out, have you always wheeled Toyotas, or was there been a time when you deviated, or are you a Toyota
man,
guy?
It's been diehard Toyota since day one. Like I've had, so the first truck, it ended up being like the frame was so rusted out. I ended up having to just like scrap it basically. And then I got a 4Runner, which I still have. And that's like, my baby daily driver, trail runner, fun truck. And I've built a bunch of complete buggy trucks and halfway streetable rock crawlers. And, there's probably, maybe 6 or 7 Toyota trucks between then and now that have just helped me learn how to do this and that's on them, just wanting to build things, really. I probably build more stuff than I actually trail ride. So that's not a good thing, I guess.
Well, what do you do like for your living? Like what's your daily job?
So I build and work on Toyotas. That's what I do for a living.
Well, there you go. So you're doing exactly, what you love kind of, right? You found that passion and were able to turn that into a living.
Yeah, basically from day one of what, I got the first truck and it was such a shit box that I was always working on it. And then I was terrible in school. So like I'm a high school dropout. So I got into a community college that had a Toyota program and I went through that and I worked at the dealership and did all that. And now I've just basically working from home, building trucks and, enjoying life.
Yeah, that's awesome. You Toyota guys, you're your own special breed. You're diehard fanatics. A Toyota person is a special type of person. Like me, for instance, I wheel a Jeep. I built a Jeep. I don't like Jeeps, but that's what I got. I'm like, whatever. It doesn't bring me joy like some other platforms do, but it's what I got and I have fun with it. But it's not like, like when you're a Toyota guy, like you live and you breathe Toyota. That's what right. I found with you guys.
Oh yeah. Like that's all I've got. My girlfriend has a 4Runner and a Lexus and my brother has a Tacoma and my grandma has a Camry. Like after I started working on them, like that's just what everybody bought, which my family basically already liked Toyotas. But as soon as I knew how to work on them, they all got one.
Yeah.
And so that's, that kind of like brings us into who you're hanging out with, the trouble crowd. Not even just the Yoda crowd. You're hanging out with Justin Reese. When I called you this morning, you said, yeah, man, I'm hanging out at Justin's place. So he's been on the show. We know he's a big Toyota guy. So the funny story is that somehow Hopper got these Yoda Mafia hoodies from him.
Yeah.
that we wear around because they're cool hoodies. And dude, every time I wear my Yoda Mafia hoodie, people are like, oh, you're a Yoda dude. Hey. Yeah. And they talk to me differently.
Yep.
Never had a Toyota in my life, but they see that shirt and it's just like a secret badge of honor, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The Yoda Mafia is a pretty big deal too. I didn't really know what it was until I hung out with Justin. And then a couple of my customers were like, oh yeah, we get stuff from Yoda Mafia. And I was like, how have I never heard of it?
Yeah. And I don't get me wrong. Toyota is a great platform. I do enjoy Toyota. That's how I got my start. I had a red 88 Toyota pickup. Oh, it was an extra
classic shit box.
Extra cab, which I loved. And it was like the it had all the features. It had a tack. It had all the cloth seats with the leather shifter boot.
You made a homemade flatbed on
Well, so the bed was rusted, so I ripped the bed off with the skid steer and forks because it was so rusted, there's no point in removing fasteners. And then I built a flatbed, and then I had this like 200-gallon upright air compressor tank that I welded to the flatbed, and it was my mobile smoker, so I could like just throw some cuts of meat in there and drive around with smoking meats on the back. And I had a whitetail rack on the front, and people would hang roadkill off the rack. It was kind of a specialty pickup. And then I blew up the front diff and sold it. And then since then I've had a couple other, I had a 87 Toyota pickup, and then I had a 81 pickup, which was just a parts truck I had big plans for, and some Toyota guy bought it off me. But Toyota's a great platform. In fact, I just sold my Subaru, not a Toyota, but still a Japanese car, and I was like, why am I selling this? Japanese cars are just so well built and designed. Everything's just thoughtful and durable and awesome.
Oh yeah.
Minus
Subarus are probably.
Oh, go ahead.
So Subarus are probably the closest thing that's designed and put together like a Toyota. I mean,
yeah,
Nissan isn't close and Honda isn't close, but Subaru is like right there behind them to me.
Yeah.
The only problem with Hopper's Subaru was it didn't like to keep the oil in the motor.
Well, so it
you can't deny it.
Subarus are great cars.
Self-changing.
The boxer engine, the boxer engine in concept is really awesome, but in reality it's kind of a trouble-prone motor. Like it lasts forever. It's just it has problems along the way just because it's laid out, you know, boxer engine just laying on its side. But long story short, the passenger side camshaft seal did not get replaced when the timing belt was done, and it would just leak oil out of that on top of the exhaust manifold. So like I go to the city and I'd be sitting at a light, just smoke rolling out of my hood. And people would be like honking at me and waving out the window. I'd just be like, yep, supposed to do that. It's okay. But solid cars, man. So you're a Toyota guy. Your first one was your first pickup was an 88.
Right. It was 88 extra cab.
Oh,
just like
yes.
What you're talking about.
Yes. What color was it?
Oh my God, it was the ugliest. It was spray painted baby blue.
Oh,
and I'm talking like not a color that any normal human would pick. Like it was like a torturous color.
Yes. Yes. I love it. So that was, you got that. And what was, tell us what the first mod, your first mod to it was.
First mod. I think the first thing I tried to do, like, was to put a system in it, because that was like the only thing that I could like go to Walmart and buy. Like I didn't know how to, like, I never walked in a parts store. I didn't know anything. So I like went to Walmart and got a sub and put in it. and hooked it up to the factory radio with no amp and realized that that doesn't work.
Oh, we've all been there, man. We've all been there. Mine was a Honda Prelude.
You weren't a car guy in high school if you didn't put a sub in something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was a Honda Prelude. The cassette deck with knobs burned up. And so my dad bought me another cassette deck with knobs. And I learned how to wire speakers without labeled wires. Basically, you know, the old touch and listen trick.
Yep.
And I did the same thing. I'm like, well, hey, the hole's big enough for a bigger speaker. And a bigger speaker must be louder. And then here's the subwoofer that's just a big speaker. Oh yeah. I've been through the same thing. Those were the good old days.
Yeah. So when did you you got your first pickup at, you know, 16. When did you first start wheeling, like, for real? I mean, you know, when you're a kid in high school, whatever, you go out and you bomb through the woods, but like, tell us about your foray into actual wheeling when you were like, this is what I meant to do.
Yeah. So like the first truck, obviously I went and bombed it in some mud holes and did all that. But basically after I got rid of it and got the 4Runner, it was a piece of junk too. And long story short, I ended up buying another truck to drive and, got it to just build basically. And so I straight axled it and dual cased and lockers and all that. And so I was probably about 17, 18-ish whenever I had it like fully built with dual cases and lockers and like went out serious off-roading with a group of guys, like with a fully built rig and zero seat time. And I didn't know what to do. And, you know, got out with those guys and they kind of showed me the ropes and I figured out that thing was way too tall and like, you know, all that stuff. And basically I wheeled the 4Runner for a couple years and then, you know, always wanted something else. And just, there's a place called Gruber ORV Park. That's probably 15 minutes from me. And that was the first place I ever went out to. That was like an actual off-road park.
Yeah. So, that's cool that you talk about, off-road parks. Just that's something I always think about, because when you live out west, like in Colorado, there's so much public land, you know, like, oh man, what is an off-road park? That's a neat concept. Well, you kind of have to have it out east, because
there's not
a lot of private land. And that's sometimes I'm like, man, whenever I go out east for races, I see your places, I'm like, oh man, I totally would love to have this and like pay to like have a membership or whatever. Like, that's a really cool concept. Public land's great and all, but you get stink eye from, you know, granola munchers and whatnot when you're trying to go out and so.
Oh, for us, it's the motocross guys that are just out there to run on trails. Like, they're pissed when you're coming down their dirt bike trail in your Toyota pickup and they have nowhere to go but off in the woods somewhere.
Nice.
So you built that thing. Oh, that would have, you said like 15, 16, 17 years ago. So,
yeah,
you know, let's not date ourselves here too much, but there wasn't the internet then was not what it is now. Right.
Like, absolutely not.
You feel like you see a lot of these guys at some of these parks and even some of the races and you're like, man, that dude built that car on the internet. How did you know what to build? How did you know what parts to use or not use? Like, what were your resources?
Man, that's a good question. And, you know, honestly, like, man, where we live, I didn't have like high speed internet until I was like 20 years old. So I did all this like dial up internet that is completely useless.
Mm-hmm. So it's like magazines and catalogs.
Yes. Like, I would do that. And like, what's crazy is like, I knew of All Pro Off-Road and it was like the hot Toyota thing back then. And, you know, they had the straight axle kits and the dual cases and all that. And then, trail gear came out like right when I had started doing that. And literally a friend told me about trail gear, and I like let the website download for like 45 minutes while I ate dinner, and then went over there and scrolled through it, you know, and figured out how much money I needed to save. And I basically just bought what I could. And, you know, like I bought 529 gears and welded the rear and bought a Detroit locker for the front. Like I did, you know, I probably spent more money than I had to, because I was just kind of going off what I seen off one or two websites.
Hmm. Well, and it's, you know, I'm not going to deny it. We do this all the time. Hey, I don't know how to fix my furnace or weld a rear end. You know, we just pull it up on YouTube and watch a guy do it. Like, these kids today don't know, man. There was a time when that didn't exist.
Yeah, you had a catalog, no, or a book or something.
It's kind of badass that you did all that yourself, and I'm assuming you just did it to learn, right?
Right, yeah. Like, I built the motor in that 4Runner when I talked about the full build, rebuild, and literally I went to O'Reilly's and bought a Chilton's manual and rebuilt the motor out of a Chilton's manual.
I love a good Chilton's manual. I had a 85 Camaro, and when I was bored, I would just like read the Chilton's manual on my Camaro.
Oh my god,
I hated Chilton's manuals because they were so, I couldn't follow them, because I'm like, oh, there's too many steps here, what if we just do this, and then it'd blow up because you didn't follow the steps. But yeah, I was never a Chilton guy.
Yeah, I was like, go buy it, and then I was like overthinking everything, so yeah. I was like terrified that I put the entire thing together wrong.
Yeah. Well, it was cool when I had that 88 or the 88, and I, one of the guys up here, he's an old animal control officer. He's no longer, he's retired now.
Old Doug?
No, Rich. Rich.
Oh, Rotten. Yeah. Dog catcher.
Yeah, dog catcher. Hung out Frank Shepard. Anyway, random tangent, but so he had an 88 at one point in time. He's like, I'm moving to Kentucky, sold my stuff, here's my book. And he gave me this giant orange, the actual shop technical manual. It was like,
oh yeah, the black and orange book.
Yes. That,
yeah,
thing,
that's a Toyota manual.
Oh, it was so great. Like, I was like, I'll never look at another Chilton manual again. That thing was bomb.
Yeah.
But so you're building stuff, you're wheeling. How'd you find out about Ultra 4, and how'd you get into it?
That's another good question. So, you know, later on, I found Pirate 4x4, and
oh yeah,
you know, I'd seen KOH on there and Ultra 4 Racing and all that. You know, it was always on the front page, like the main page when you'd first get on there, and I'd look at it and stuff, but I always like put Ultra 4 with like trophy trucks and like NASCAR. I didn't know anything about it. I always thought it was like so big, like it was completely unachievable to ever be an Ultra 4 driver. And, but you know, that's when I seen it, and I just kind of put that in the back of my head and always just, you know, thought about it, that it was cool and I'd love to do it, but I never like thought I could do it. So, basically, later on down the road, I met this guy, Chad Bartley, that had a little off-road shop in Wyandotte, Oklahoma. And we were just, I didn't know him at all. I'd like just met him that day, and me and him are just BSing. And he's talking about going to King of the Hammers. And I was like, dude, I've always wanted to go. And he's just like, you can go with me. And next thing I know, like, 2 weeks later, I'm loading up in the truck with some other guy that I've never met. We just rolled out the hammers.
Isn't it crazy, and, man? I mean, we've all got different stories, but they all start with like somebody saying, just come on out. Like,
yeah,
it's just nuts how hammers works like that.
Yeah. So the guy, Chad Bartley, he owns Hired Gun Off Road, him and his partner David Fox own it together, and David had a 4400 car, and they were racing, and they were just basically looking for pit guys and help, you know, so they just loaded up whoever they could take, and we split fuel, so it helped them, and I got to go, and they gave me a place to sleep, and That was probably 5 or 6 years ago, and I've only missed one hammer since then. I've been hooked ever since.
Mm. So that's how. So after that, then I'm assuming somewhere in there you started, like, I'm going to race it myself instead of just showing up to go and help. You decided.
Yeah.
To
answer. I never really decided. It was just kind of an accident.
That's but, an expensive accident.
Yeah, I want to hear more about this accident.
So. It really wasn't that expensive. So when I went to my first hammers, I was already building a tube chassis buggy. I was building a tube chassis Toyota buggy, and it was basically just a trail buggy. But after I got back from hammers, I was like, oh, you know, like I'll build it around the lines of a race car. That way, you know, I could race it if I want. And so it was basically going to be fit under the rules of a Legends car, 4800 class. And so I built on that thing for probably 4 years. And I was like, man, like I haven't been trail riding. I haven't been wheeling. Like this sucks. I'm going to just like, I'd love to buy something, but I really don't have the money. And a little tan truck popped up on Facebook Marketplace for like $2,000. And I ended up giving him like $800 in a KX65 dirt bike I got for nothing for that truck. And that's basically where that truck came along. And I built it a little bit. You know, I just put Chevy springs in the back and the rears in the front, basic cheap build, got it on the trail. And then I put a cage in it. And then Pro Rock came to Mid-America and they had a stock class race. And so all I had to do was put window nets and a light on the back to race it. Hmm. And that's what I did. And I ended up winning that race. And then that was like hook, line, and sinker right then and there.
So you didn't – your first aspiration wasn't stock class. You were just kind of –
Absolutely not, no.
Man, and that's crazy. But it sounds to me like you got hooked on stock class pretty quick.
Yeah, so I ended up selling the 4800 car I was building at the beginning of this year and just put all that money into my 4600 program. And like, I don't plan on going anywhere for a long time. I love 4600.
Yeah, well, you said like one of the reasons we like it too. I mean, you kind of had a semi-built vehicle that was done on a budget and you really just had to do a few safety things to it. And then they let you take that out and race it. I mean, essentially right. The same course as the big cars, you know, and it really, that's the beauty of the 4600s, right?
Oh yeah. There's so many people out there with like decent trail rigs that just need a few safety things and they could come to 4600 mm-hmm. race and they just don't realize it.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love like 4,400 and I love 1,800 horsepower and I love 40-inch tires, but I have found that the 4,600 class, like that's my favorite class. I mean, it's in my opinion, that's where it's at. And
you know,
when I see you tearing down the race course, waving at everybody with your tailgate, I'm like, hell yes. This is the best part of racing right here.
That's Hopper's talking about nationals this year. You ran about half the race with that poor little tailgate, man, flopping in the back. Just every time you'd hit a rock, we could feel it in our spines, man, that tailgate. And every time you came by, it was still on there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And all of it made it home with me, too. Like, the top of it broke off. And afterwards I was like walking around at the trunk or treat and some guy just comes running up and he's like, I've got the rest of your tailgate. And he like ran over to his Jeep and pulled it out and gave it back to me.
That is awesome.
That's a classic Oklahoma story right there, man. Nowhere else in the world would that happen, but a race in Oklahoma.
Oh yeah.
So the other cool thing about stock, you know, we have never pitted for guys in stock class. We've watched the races like nationals. We were already in the pits for the 4,900 race, which is right after the 4,600 race. So we get to watch a lot of the classes guys work together and pit. And it blows me away. Like as you're competing against each other, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, 4,600 guys have this bond, except for the three Broncos, obviously. it's just crazy because, like, we're sitting next to these guys, and I'm trying to pick up who they're pitting for based off of just, you know, eavesdropping. And their buddies with, like, 10 of the 12 cars in the race. And I'm like, finally, I was like, who are you guys pitting for? And they're like, whoever comes in here, man. Like, that's – we all pit together in this class. I'm like, man, this is nuts.
Oh, yeah.
One of the – I think one of the funny things, you know, it's – you kind of brought it up earlier with the 4,600 class. It's like the 4,600 class, and then there's like its own little subclass in there where it's like the Broncos, and then it's everybody else. Don't get me wrong. I love watching those Broncos run, and there is that aspect of like, well, if you want to beat them, you got to – build better, but it's really hard to do a homebrew race car on a homebrew budget against all of the might of Ford Motor Corporation and their $100,000 plus purpose-built stock race Broncos. And I'm a Ford guy. I love Ford to death. Like, that's my thing, but it's still fun. It's still fun to watch.
But yeah, you know, it's the Broncos are really fast. And after the races, I always look at lap times and kind of see where some people are and their lap times versus my lap times and people that are faster than me and their lap times. And man, sometimes the lap times aren't that far away. Like, you know, there's a couple of years of changing of everybody changing and doing things. And I really don't think the Broncos are completely uncatchable.
Oh, they're they're definitely not. It's just gonna take a little ingenuity. But if anybody if anybody can beat them, it's the 4,600 class people, because they're the guys that are like mad scientists in the garage in the middle of the night. You know, they got home from their regular work job and now they're out in the shop, and you know, the kids have been acting the fool all day, so I gotta go hide from the kids out in the shop. I'm kind of talking about myself for a minute there. But no, I love my girls. Okay, just clarify that. But yeah, they're catchable, they're beatable. It's just gonna take a little bit more time, just because there's a big there's a big difference between, like I said, a homebrew setup and a corporation.
Yeah, my 41-year-old truck ain't catching them, but I can have fun racing with them.
Heck yeah, and it's a good benchmark too, right? Like, we don't progress and we don't get better unless there's a challenge, you know, and
absolutely.
The challenge is way out there, but heck, it's there. And it's just waiting. It's just waiting for somebody to come pluck it off that challenges.
Well, and we all know how Ultra 4 is, man, just because those guys show up, and it's like this in any class, just because those top four or five guys show up, they are not guaranteed to finish any more than anybody else in that field.
Yep.
No.
So
no, they got to drive. They got to drive over the same thing as I got to drive over. So
yeah,
you know.
So you've been doing. You said a couple, 3 years. You've been running Ultra 4.
Yeah. So I think it's 2 years, but I've raced three nationals. You know, nationals like at the end of the year. Yep. So I raced the national was my first race at the end of the year. And then I raced a couple races that next year, and then this year.
Okay.
So we've talked about this before, because we raced nationals in 2021. So that was at Crossbar. And that was probably where your first race was too then, because I think they ran there a couple of years. So you're an Oklahoma guy. We love Crossbar. We really love Disney this year too, don't get me wrong. But like, Crossbar was just a little different, a little more endurance. It weeded some guys out because of the mileage, and it added a little strategy into the pits. But yeah, man, the fact that the awesome course at Crossbar we had, and the awesome track that JT built at Disney, I mean, that's two of the best tracks in Oklahoma right there, I think, that we raced.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of guys on the East Coast and the West Coast give the schedule grief, but man, you gotta go where the racing's good, right? Oklahoma's got some good racing, so
yeah, it definitely does. And I'm pretty happy and blessed to be right in the middle of all of it right now. Like, I never in my life would have dreamed that Ultra Four was even going to race in Oklahoma, especially at Disney. Like, it blows my mind that they're even coming to a place I've been going to for 12 years. I never thought that we would have a race at Disney ever.
Yeah, Disney's magical, man. That's the only word I've got for it. And I was talking to you out there, and you were talking about kind of like your past experiences, and you straight up blew my mind because you pointed to this big Gigantor boulder, and you're like, oh yeah, that was over there one time, and they opened the floodgates, and then now it's here. And I was like, what? Like, this rock is literally the size of a house, and you were pointing at like way upstream, and now it's down here. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So I got on YouTube and was watching some YouTube videos of them using those floodgates and releasing water. And I'm still speechless thinking about standing there on the racetrack, the race course, and then watching these videos of like water, like up to the top of the woods, basically. Bananas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I've seen where the starting line was, where that would be like 10 foot of water.
That's crazy. So you've spent time out there. Have you ever, because one guy was telling me about, yeah, well, sometimes you'll be out there and then you hear the whistles and you better get out of the way because water's coming. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so we went to a big meet run one year, and like, say big meet runs on a Saturday, and we were there all day Friday, and like in the middle of the day Friday, the sirens go off, and you know, they go off for, I don't know, at least 30 minutes, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour. And then they just slowly start letting the gates open. And from what I heard is like if the water reaches a certain thing or like upstream, there's water coming, like they have to open it. Like there is no, oh, well, there's people down there. So I was actually I didn't get to ask JT about it during the race, like what the deal was with that. But I assume they just, since we hadn't had any rain in a long time, like obviously they didn't need to open it. So.
Yeah. Cause I was getting a little nervous, you know, walking around like, oh, what if I hear a whistle and all of a sudden, cause you know, I'm not the most swimming person you've ever met, but I can float with the best of them, I suppose.
You can float, you might be 20 miles away, but you'll be all right.
Oh, that's bananas. Huh? All right. So you've been racing for a couple years. What's your future look like?
I'm going to do hammers next year in 23. It's going to be my first hammers, my first time driving at hammers, I guess I should say.
Okay.
And I'm just going to just enjoy the season and race which races I can. And, you know, in my hopes of in the future is I'd love to build a forerunner, an IFS forerunner, and you know, try to go fast and chase the Broncos. But I'm just kind of doing my homework on that now and just kind of letting that fall into place when it happens. I'm not going to rush it because there's a lot of learning to do as far as IFS goes and stuff for me. So I'm just kind of taking my time and watching and learning, and maybe I'll come in one day with something cool.
Well, you hang out with a pretty good group, a pretty knowledgeable group. You're hanging out with Justin Reese and the Rusty Nail guys. Like, there's some knowledge there. I'm sure that you're
absolutely
soaking that up as much as you can. They're kind of changing their program up a little bit next year. I know that.
Right.
When you go to Hammers, is that who you're kind of? Are you kind of attached with those guys?
Yeah. So I reached out to Justin a couple months ago because I was really wanting to race hammers in my truck. And, you know, I'm basically a one-man show when I go to a race. It's just me and my girlfriend and my kid. And that's usually it. And that's kind of how I like it. I kind of like to be alone and just kind of do my own thing. But like at Hammers, that's just not a thing. You got to have a co-driver and you got to have crew. And, you know, me and Justin have been yapping back and forth for a while. And I asked him if he would, like, if I could join him with my truck and we could race. And, you know, we talked about it and he was cool with that. And then a couple months later, he was like, "Hey, well, how do you feel about just driving the 4619 and just drive my truck?" And I was like, "Well, hell yeah, I'll drive your truck." So that's what we're going to do. Is Justin's going to 4800 and I'm going to keep his truck alive and we're going to race it again and, you know, have fun. We've got, I don't know how many people on Rusty Nail Racing as the team. How many?
60.
Now, there's 60 crew members. I was trying to get how many drivers.
Four this year.
Yeah, there's going to be, four or five drivers that race under Rusty Nail as a team. You know, 60 crew members is crazy because every team I've went out there with, it's been like maybe five, maybe 10 at best. You know, you usually just team up with people and just share. But
that's those Toyota guys though. You know, they're just kind of crawling all over the place looking for parts. And you know, when you think of Toyota, always in my mind, when I think of Toyotas and racing, it's always like a Mad Max scene, you know, like there's some rusty shitbox Toyota with like 13 shifters in the cab and there's like people wearing like repurposed football pads and mohawks and like it gives me a good feeling to think about Toyotas.
You got the rusty shitbox and 13 shifters absolutely dead. Yes. That's how we like them.
Yes, I love it.
Well, you know, we kind of have modeled our setup a little similar to like what Rusty Nail does with our UTV program. You know, we work with 5-ish teams every year at Hammers, and it makes it so much easier when you're all camped together, because it's inevitable one guy's got something going on and another guy doesn't, so it's easy to get over there and lend a hand. And plus just the in race support, you know, makes a huge difference. Things you don't think about at Hammers, right? Somebody's got to cook food. Like if no one's to cook, like you starve. I don't even starve. I just don't eat.
You just don't eat.
Yeah.
So,
or you spend $100 on breakfast burritos in Hammertown, which is,
I couldn't do it.
But
they're so good, but they're so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was this place that had little street tacos. They're like $1 a piece, $2.
That guy that built, do you remember? He built the whole building. House.
Yeah. Oh, so good. I ate so many tacos there.
I am a carny food guy, so I like the I'm going to get teased for this, but I like the funnel cake stand. That's my go-to. Hopper thinks I eat funnel cakes wrong.
Yeah.
I just eat whatever's going to keep me out of those nasty porta-potties.
Well, some of us don't have a choice. We just live in those, and we just deal with it. The good thing is at Hammers, at least last year, it was so chilly that it was always nice to go into a porta potty because it was like warm and steamy and you got to get a little body heat back.
Ooh, no.
Ooh.
I disagree with that.
See, I'm the opposite. I go first thing in the morning right after I see that truck driving out of Hammertown.
Yeah.
So we actually did discuss, because I think last year, I think at one point we ended up with about 60 people in our group too. And
wow,
we brought it up, like, let's just rent 2 porta potties next year, because everybody's paying $80 a tank to get their black tanks dumped. And like, that's what I hate. I hate spending money on that. So like, let's just get a couple of porta potties. We'll keep them clean and respectable. And we need to look into that a little bit more this year. That was Josh Smith's brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hammers is a different world. There's no trees to hide behind and take a dump like out here in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
There's like that one bush out there that everybody's hopping on their cell phones at. So you definitely don't want to get caught with your pants down out there.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think it matters, man, because when you go outside of the fence or outside of the wire, as we refer to it, it's like Yeah, dude, they don't even care. They just crap where they're standing. They don't care who sees, man. Those people out there are
crazy.
Well, and I know that Rusty Nail's outside of the fence. I'm not trying to group them into this, but there's some craziness out there, man.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I love my nice little cozy spot in Hammertown.
Respectable.
Yeah.
With an automatic transmission.
Now, granted, we camp about 20 feet behind the stage, and when Sublime came on the night before a race,
we had the concert in our beds. It was great.
Oh, no. That was like before a race, too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Wednesday night, and UTVs raced Thursday morning.
Oh, no.
To be honest, we were sleeping so well at night anyway. Like, I think I made it through two songs of my camper rattling, and I fell asleep. It didn't bother me one bit.
Yeah, I co-drove in UTV last year, and I remember the whole crew, like, went to watch it, and I was like, screw y'all, I'm going to bed. We're racing tomorrow. Like, I'm not going out to have fun, or I won't come back till 3 in the morning.
Well, now, see, our racers, our drivers and co-drivers are those typical drivers and co-drivers. We're up at 5 a.m. getting stuff ready for the pits and putting things in place. Those guys are still tucked in bed. They woke up to a nice warm breakfast made for them. Like, our guys had it pretty cush last year. Mm. We'll see what happens this year.
Yeah.
So, all right, here's the main reason why I wanted to have a good 4600 guy on here. Okay, Hopper has a dream, and he thinks that dream starts with 4600.
Yep, it does. I think
it's a good start.
He's always got crazy ideas. So, if anybody's ever listened to this show, they know Hopper's got crazy ideas, and sometimes crazy ideas are the best ideas,
and sometimes they're the worst, but they're the best because they have awesome stories. So I'll pick your brain real quick. I want to build a 4600.
I'm going to make sure you're cool going public with this. These have been top secret plans to this point, but
yeah, of course I'm going to talk about it because something good may come from it.
Yes.
Or else someone's going to poach my awesome idea, and then I'm going to be like living forever in their shadows. So don't poach my awesome idea. So I want to build an F-250 4600 car.
Oh my God.
I love that reaction. Maybe elaborate a little bit more. Good idea.
Keep going.
Bad idea.
So here's the idea. So like 2015 and up, okay? Single cab, regular bed.
Short bed.
Right. Well, regular bed because it's F-250. The idea being you have 1-ton axles pretty much. You got straight up beef. They're new enough to where you have the... It's a solid front axle. I'm a solid front axle guy. I don't like IFS, but you've got the solid front axle. You've got coil springs in the front. You've got the trailing arms or whatever they're called, the linkage for the front axle. And then 2015 and newer, you're new enough. You don't have to deal with the Triton garbage Ford had. It's their new Boss motors. And they're fairly lightweight comparatively. The cabs lost a lot of weight during the redesigns. In my opinion, it's really strong, and you get some decent power out of those power plants.
Absolutely. And with that thing, you could just block the whole trail so no one could pass you. You'd definitely win that way.
Well, big booty Judy.
That's what everyone keeps telling me. It's too freaking big. And I'm like, but is it though? I don't know. Compared to Toyota pickup, it's huge, but not compared to the new Broncos, it's not that big.
True.
Yeah. Granted, there's a big gap between the new Bronco and a Ford F-250. I don't know. The plans change a lot. That's my latest iteration. Nothing's happening because there's money to be, you know, you got to buy stuff. And then for us in Colorado, you can't afford any kind of land to build any kind of shop on. Real estate's through the roof, so no one can afford shop space. There's a lot of
factors.
So I'm like,
real estate is very expensive.
My role in this whole thing is devil's advocate, right? Let's do the old pros and cons list. So
let's stop for a minute. The main reason I want to do an F-250 is because I don't know
if you've noticed or not, but I'm a fairly portly fella, and I don't fit so well in Toyota cabs. There's a lot of hopper to cram into a small space when it comes to Toyota.
We're going
to
circle back.
You could fit.
I have
we'll just loop you up and throw you at the window.
Yeah. So I told Hopper, I said, I don't know. I'm not a 4600 historian, but I don't know that this has been done. It might have been tried once or twice. But sometimes when something hasn't been done, there's only two reasons, right? One of them is it's a terrible idea, and that's why no one's ever done it. Now,
another reason is because I'm the first genius to think of it.
Because no one's thought of it. I mean, I'm the biggest advocate for this being a terrible idea, but it could be a great idea. I don't know.
Yeah. But just judging by Mick's response when I first broached the subject, it might be a terrible idea. If anybody would know, it'd be him.
Yeah, if you get that thing stuck, you'll be getting it helicoptered out like that guy at Hammers last year.
So let's look outside the scope of King of the Hammers and like look at some of the other Ultra 4 races you've been at. I don't know if you raced this year specifically, but would a rig like that survive those races, like a Crandon? I mean, it would be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It would be incredible to see an F-250 race at Crandon.
Oh, yeah. And like the what's the one in Montana? Like where it's big and open. Like, dude, it would scream there.
As I was telling Hopper how terrible of an idea this was, I did say that Montana would be the race for that truck. Because you would just
there.
The field truck, man, and that's a field race. Like you would just cruise through that field. And then think about that lip where those dudes were getting air this year. Can you imagine launching your F-250 10 feet in the air?
Yeah. Well, so I was watching some of the contingency for the Baja 1000 because that's about to kick off. And there's one of the couldn't tell you the class, but there's a class where it's all these guys in like rear wheel drive F-250s and F-350s. I was like, damn, that's pretty cool. So Mick, if you are talking to a guy who's thinking about getting into racing outside of just a support role and he wants to build, what would you recommend as like I mean, you're a Toyota guy, but what would you recommend?
And I'm going to recommend a Toyota of your budget. Like my truck is very cheap to get it to the starting line. And then, you know, you could go up to something newer and it's just.
Yeah. Something like what Sherpa runs maybe.
Interesting concepts.
So like, man, you can't beat a Toyota pickup. It's super reliable, and they're faster than they should ever be. They're never meant to go as fast as we drive them.
Yeah,
so they're available. They're easy to find.
Well,
they're
easy to get.
Like I said, that's how I started was with a Toyota. But I'm a Ford guy. That's my problem.
So
like, I want to race a Ford.
Here's where I'm really trying to push Hopper into getting into racing. First step. Baby steps on a budget. I'm saying class 11 VW Bug.
Yes.
It's cool, but it's not 4x4, and I really like rock crawling. There's not a lot of
rocks. Well, we ain't rock crawling that. That's going to be a short course car for sure. But it's
rock crawl them.
You can rock crawl them, he says.
I have seen a guy drive one of those off the waterfall at Disney.
Oh wow. My gosh.
Where are you? I guarantee you that's on YouTube.
Dude,
somewhere.
We got to look
that YouTube up. It's on there. And that guy is awesome. I've respected those things ever since I seen those guys. And then when I seen class 11, I was just like, this is the coolest class ever.
So Baja 1000 starts tomorrow. I'm a Baja guy. I love watching it. Like that's up there. That's on my goal list to go be a part of that someday in a support role or whatever. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I always associate class 11 bugs with like Ultra Force 4600 class. Like no one cares about their spines or their spleens. or their livers, like, and they just get out there and you guys are racing what people raced 30 years ago or even older, like these class 11 guys, man, they were racing these in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
I just, man, that's the roots of it all. Yeah. And we did maybe sit in a class 11 bug last weekend and Hopper totally fit.
I was super surprised. I was like, dang, this is a lot more comfy than I was expecting.
It was cool, man. I mean,
I didn't realize Germans circa 1965 were that worried about space inside of the cockpit, but apparently they were. Well, cool. That's some good advice. You know, just thinking about size, I still want to kind of keep that dream of maybe doing a F-250 race truck alive. But at the same time, I don't really relish being helicoptered out of spots. That doesn't sound like a good time at all.
I could totally see you in like a sweet Bronco 2 or something like that.
Dude, I mean, we are big fans of Robbie Layton on YouTube. And his boy Hillbilly, they're rebuilding a Bronco 2 right now. And it is like my best friend, one of my best friends growing up, man, he had like two of those things. And he loved those Bronco 2s.
The problem is they're so freaking fragile. They're just, and I hate TTB suspension. Oh, such a bad idea. It works in the desert, but that's it.
Yeah. I mean, like a Toyota pickup is like the worst thing I feel like you could pick to race, but it works out. Like, it has literally like 60 wheel horsepower and leaf springs.
Yeah. What motor are you running, a 22 RE or like a R, the fuel injected? Well, which motor?
Yeah, are you using? It's an RE. It's just a fuel injected 22 R basically.
Yeah. I actually years ago, I met a guy down in Grand Junction and we wheeled a trailer too. I couldn't tell you what trails they were, but he was in a Toyota pickup with a 22 RET, which was kind of ridiculous. RET, for you that don't know, that's the turbocharged 22R inline four. And it was kind of ridiculous because it made all of like 13 grams of boost. It sounded cool, but it really didn't do anything, especially when he had all 18 shifters engaged into triple low and he was like boosting. I was like, why do you even have a boosted motor? Like, there's no point because it's like
for the swoosh noises. Why else?
Oh, it's totally legit, man. I have no desire to have a turboed Razor for my private, like, personal rec wheel Razor. But man, that noise of that turbo.
It is cool.
It is cool.
Yeah.
It is and cool.
I will say this. I'm a supercharger fan too when it comes to like the car world. But one supercharger I do not love is freaking Scott Lesage's, man. I think it's the exhaust. It's not the supercharger.
I love it. I love the idea because he's so innovative and it's such a cool concept. But holy moly, when he comes through the pits, you're like, I can't hear. And then it takes like a full 5 minutes for your hearing to come back after he leaves.
Oh, so loud.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's crazy about those Broncos and 4600, man. They just kind of like hum by. Like,
it's not even a hum. It's like a weed whacker by. You're like, they're running so well and so fast. And then you realize what power plant's in there and then you hear it and you're like, something's not computing right now, but they work. They really work. That's for sure.
Right. They work.
So anything else that you want to bring up or talk about? I know it's kind of,
you said you're a small program, a one man program, but who are some of your sponsors, man? Or how do you get sponsors? Like kind of lay out that part of your program for us.
So I really don't have any sponsors. I've got like people that are like my buddies and my helpers, and I just call them like partners, I guess, but you know, they're in the same category as a sponsor. But probably my number one one right now that just really helped me is Tim Jenkins with DOA Racing Engines. He helped me get a good healthy motor in the truck, and he spent hours on the phone with me just getting it dialed in and adjusted, because it's 80s technology and there's nobody that knows how to do it. Nobody like him, for sure. My buddy Chad from Hired Gun Off Road, he's always getting me. He's big into Jeeps, but he knows everything about everything un-Toyota related. So if I ever need like some Himes or some weird parts that I don't know anything about, like, he knows exactly what I need and gets them to me. And really, that's probably the main two guys. There's, you know, a couple other people that help me out that I can't think of, but man, those are the two main guys that I can always rely on to help me get stuff quickly.
That's part of what I love about Ultra 4, man. It's like, you're not alone. There's so many kind of one man shows, you know. It's never one man. There's always other guys helping behind the scenes, but it's amazing, like, how people show up to the races and just, hey man, you know, Hopper walks around in the pits in his fire suit and guys are like, hey, can you fuel for me? Yep, absolutely. No problem. You know, that's what the fire suit's for. Mm-hmm. And I love that grassroots part of it. You said it at the very beginning. Like, I also thought Ultra 4 was this pinnacle. It must be this huge organization with these big names. And, you know, we'll never be a part of that world. And, I mean, here we are. Like, we're all a part of that world. And we're still, like,
right.
We're no offense, man, but we're all still a bunch of nobodies, right? We all still got jobs.
Yeah.
And we just show up to an organized event together. But it's just crazy how different Ultra 4 is from some of the other series. Now, don't get me wrong, man. I've got other series that I'd love to get involved in. But every time me and Hopper talk about, should we go desert racing? Should we reach out to some teams in some of these other places? And it's like, man, Ultra 4 is our home. Like, this is kind of where we feel safe.
Yeah, it's our safe space.
Yeah.
And I'm like a rock crawler. I want to do hardcore rocks. That's what I want to do, and nobody else does it but Ultra 4.
Yeah, and that's my whole reason why I haven't dove further into something like Class 11, because it don't got no rocks in it.
Oh, but it'd be fun, man.
I like the rocks, though.
I think about all the people that we've met in the last couple of years, and just think about how we would probably have, if you were driving a VW Bug, you'd have the loudest cheering section at the race. Guaranteed, man.
Well, I cheer for myself pretty loudly in my own head. I am my own cheerleader.
As far as races next year, we kind of talked about it. What, you don't have anything set in stone on East versus West, or are you just going to pick a couple?
Yeah, I usually like focus towards East, and, you know, obviously I'm going to do Hammers. I think Rush was on there. I did Rush and I really liked it. I got third there. So I'd like to do it again. It's super hardcore mud. Mm. Like, that's a course. Like, so I'd like to do it again. There's Disney again, which I'll definitely do that. I know there's divisions. I'll definitely be there. Lake Havasu, we stopped there on the way back from Hammers, and that place is just beautiful. And even if I go there and don't race, I would love to go back there again. So,
well, that was the first one our wives circled on the calendar, because they were like, Lake Havasu in October, sign us up. Well,
it's an awesome place.
We're obviously, we're total like Homer fans, for the Montana race. I, even though that's still like 12 hours for us, I consider that like our home race. So we always encourage guys, like, you got to come to Montana and race, man. There's nothing else like it. But there's not rocks. There's no rocks. It's
right.
Imagine going to Western Oklahoma and just having a race in the middle of some guy's field. And it's different, but it is fun.
Yeah. I watched the videos. It definitely looks like fun. Like, you just haul butt on some back washout road, and that's a lot of fun to do. So I would love to do it. I don't remember if it's an East or West Coast race, but I remember looking, and it was a pretty good drive for me from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of basically what I base my races off of, is the driving distance of whether it's doable or not.
I like Montana because basically to me, it's when I was a kid and growing up around all these farms, Montana is what all the old guys told you you couldn't do, right? Don't drive through my right. field on that four-wheeler. Don't hit those terraces and get air. Don't do this. Don't do that. And you go up to Montana and Aaron and Grizz are like, do it all. Go just as fast as you want.
Don't yeah. hit the cows. Don't run through the fence.
Yep.
But do it all.
And kill rattlesnakes.
Yeah. They're delicious, by the way.
Never well, tried rattlesnake.
Well, I tell you what, if we're ever at a race and we find us some rattlers, I'll cook them up and then you can try. They are.
I'll try it.
They're actually quite good. You know, everyone's like, oh, it tastes like chicken. They definitely have a distinct taste. It's not bad. It's kind of a, I'd say a little bit nutty. It's a lot like rabbits a little bit, but it's you put some butter and some salt and lemon pepper in there, and it's like fish, but it's not fishy. It's consistent. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but I do enjoy rattlers.
I'm gonna snakey.
Yeah, it's snakey.
Yeah, I'm gonna assume since you're from Oklahoma, man, you eat beef, so. Just stick to the beef. Don't worry about this rattlesnake business. It ain't worth it.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Well, Mick, I sure appreciate you coming on with us. It's been great chatting with you. Like I said, 4,600. You guys are, in my opinion, you guys are the true heroes of the sport. That's why I aspire to become a 4,600 racer someday myself, is because you guys are all my heroes.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I had a good time being on.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're going to see it at King of the Hammers. We'll definitely track you down, man, because we got to harass some of those rusty nail guys as we usually do. Great guys. Man, if you're racing with them, you're going to have a good time. But we always like to give them a little flack. I told Bobby Lindgren, I said, man, I forgot that you even raced Ultra 4 this year.
Yeah.
Because with the new car, and I know that, well, I know Justin, man, he's got a crazy schedule in the summer. But yeah, we haven't seen those guys at a race for a while. So it'll be cool that you're able to team up with those guys. And yeah, man, I love having new people on this show because now I feel like it just gives us that many more people to like, go hang out with and maybe steal a little bit of food off of.
Always steal food off of them. That's don't tell anybody, but that's the main reason why we have the podcast, is so we get to know people and we can go raid their camps and they'll give us food freely. Great plan.
Yeah, you can always come by. I've always got ramen and beef jerky hanging out.
Yes. Yes, love it. Ramen's really good at races because it helps keep you out of the porta potties. Or does the opposite.
Exactly.
Well, I think you're going to eat a little bit better with the Rusty Nail guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's been feeding me all week, and I'm happy for sure.
Dude, we were racing in Moab last year. It was just Joe and I when we went up there, and we were across the road from each other. And every time I would, like, show myself out of the trailer, they were like, come over and get some food. Come over and get some food. Ah, they fed me so well.
And Joe didn't bring any food, if I remember correctly.
Correct. So thank God for Rusty Nail. Yeah.
Well, like Hopper said, thanks for coming on, man. I know I reached out to you last minute, but, man, that's kind of how we roll here every Thursday. And I really appreciate you getting back to me, man, and taking the time to kind of share your story. I think you're a really relatable guy when it comes to Ultra 4. You said it. I said it. We think Ultra 4 is this big thing, man. But here you are on a shoestring budget, really just doing what you're passionate about. And that's what we love, man. We really appreciate that we were able to sit down with you tonight and learn about that.
Absolutely. I love to let people know that it's a lot easier to join than you'd think. And there's a budget. If you have a budget, you can find a place in Ultra 4.
Absolutely. We are kind of all examples of that. We all had to start somewhere. And like I said, a lot of us share similar stories and how we got to the race and got the bug. So it's just cool to hear that from you, man. We'll see you at Hammers. Thanks for coming on, man. We hope you have a good off season and your prep goes good. I mean, you're in Colorado right now, so it must right. be doing all right.
Yep. Getting the 46-19 ready for Hammers.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We had a great time with Mick on tonight. We have a pretty cool guest I'm excited about next week. Stay tuned for next week's episode. It's going to be a little different, but we are going to get some really good stories out of our guests next week. I'm going to leave it a little mysterious still. But, yeah, tune in next week. Have a good week. I know Thanksgiving's next week. We're going to maybe try to get the episode out a day early so everybody can listen to it on the holiday. And, yeah, we'll catch all you guys next week.
You've been listening to The Pit Guys. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and all major podcast platforms. We'll see you at the races.